You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. We also welcome Frank LaBeouf and Shaka Hislop with us for the show. And look how excited they are by talking about Spurs.
Must be a big show today.
Oh, it's a big show.
Shaq's got a shirt on.
He's got a shirt on.
And it looks to me as if it's seen an iron in the last 24 hours.
You're in one of those moods. Good. Spurs are through to the Carabao Cup final after beating Brentford by 2-0. Spurs are on their way to Wembley. Craig, first time in 6 years a domestic final.
I had a chuckle about that because they were playing the Spurs on the way to Wembley song in the interview.
It's an old song, isn't it?
Mr. Sissoko by Chaz and Dave, and they asked him, and I know you'll be thinking watching this, who the hell is Chaz and Dave? And they asked Mr. Sissoko about the song. I mean, please, that's the standard of reporting these days. What did you mean I'm in that one of those moods?
Well, because you're just kind of, you're quite chirpy.
Well, I'm just glad to be out of the house. What do you want me to say about the Tottenham game?
I don't know.
I mean, job done, going to Wembley, you know, obviously playing one of the Manchester clubs. Controlled the game, Brentford actually, a key point in the game, scored. And it was real, I mean, it was a crazy offside. Did you see it? You probably wouldn't see it because you're in the studio recording stuff.
It was a knee, wasn't it?
It was ruled out for VAR because of the knee. And I know offside's supposed to be black and white. The clear and obvious doesn't come into it on an offside. But it's impossible to tell by the angle. Moussa Sissoko, I think it was, might have had a size 15 boot on. We wouldn't have known. And it could have played him onside. So there was people arguing about that on social media. Brentford fourth in the Championship, sold Watkins and Benrahma in the summer to West Ham.
Right, Villa, good, yes.
And Tottenham getting the job done. Right. What else do you want me to say about it? Tottenham played a strong team, got the job done. It wasn't pretty like most Tottenham games.
Yes.
And Mourinho goes to Wembley looking for a trophy, which is, you know, that's what he wants.
Right.
Carabao Cup or not.
Should we just move on?
And they played it over
Frank
one
Shaka,
leg.
Do you want to say anything about this game? You did watch it.
Nope.
No. Frank?
I watched it.
Oh.
Nothing to see.
Right. Frank?
Solid, efficient, boring. Okay, you can go on.
Perfect. All right, then. Well, let's talk about the Carabao Cup semi-final, the remaining one on Wednesday, which is the Manchester derby. United have actually won 3 of the last 5 of these encounters. This, on the other hand, should be fun, shouldn't it, Craig?
We're just not giving Tottenham enough love.
Well, no, I'm sure they appreciate it.
Well, listen, you wind me up.
I do? Why?
You do, because quite often you sit here and say, it's not going to be a great game, blah, blah. And a lot of these games between the Manchester clubs are, but if you see the 0-0 draw December 12th?
Didn't I just say it was going to be a good game?
Yeah.
Right, so you're citing that 1-0-0 as to why it won't be?
It was horrible.
Right.
Right, it was horrible. So we don't know what we're going to get. I hope we're going to get an exciting game. Man United, the only injury I'm aware of is Phil Jones. So really not an issue for him because he's not been part of it. Guardiola has talked again about, I can't put a team together for COVID. But I've looked at the injury list and the COVID list. And unless I've missed something, it hasn't changed since they pulverised Chelsea.
So don't you just put out the same team? Why would you change anything considering they were so good?
I'm getting to that.
We'll get there quicker.
My point being is, if Guardiola, off the back of a fantastic performance, is saying, I can barely put a team on the field again, well, am I missing something? Or has he got the same squad that he had for the Chelsea game? If he has, that's more than good enough to take in. Right? So unless there's more COVID cases, I've raised their heads. And if there are, I apologise. He's got the same squad. And if they play the way they played against Chelsea, they'll win this game. Because that was mesmerising stuff. But can they do that 2 games on the spin? That remains to be seen. Maybe Aguero will get some game time.
Well, that's it, isn't it, Frank? Why can't they do it? Why can't they just put out the same team and put in that same sort of performance as they did against Chelsea?
I want to see the same team because I want to see the same performance, because like that I can level the power of Manchester United comparing to Chelsea, because I think that City is above both teams. So I want to make sure that City is showing to the world that they're back to even if it's not the Premier League that they're going to play tomorrow, that they're going to be the contender for the Premier League. So I'm expecting the same type of game, same type of results, same type of performance, therefore same type of same team and its first 11. They don't have much choices. I think they are in a good on a good road right now, and they have to keep on going if they want to go through and maybe play the final, but also reinsure everybody about their future.
How do United approach this game, Shaka? Is there an argument to say that they have got more to gain by winning it?
Absolutely, they've got more to gain. Despite the relative positions in the table, and I know City are breathing on their necks with the game in hand, I think United need to show, and to themselves as much as anyone, that they deserve to be where they are. Their football over the last month or so, I think, has been arguably best in the league. The weird thing from the first time these two met in the league is I felt City set up to kind of counter what United were doing, and I don't think that I've seen Pep Guardiola do that at any point in his managerial career. He seemed more concerned with opposition than his team. They're playing a whole lot better now than they were then, but then so are United. I'd like to see Pep Guardiola put out his the same team that he played against Chelsea and play their football. I have no problem with the tactics of considering the opponent, but don't let that be your primary motive. I think he does that, we have a good game.
I think when you say just play how you did against Chelsea is, yeah, I mean, that's a good way of thinking about it, but United are a different headache. They pose different problems. Chelsea, we know, are not playing well. They play 4-3-3. They have two wide guys up front. It was Pulisic and Ziyech at the weekend. It was Werner before. So they don't have that player that they thought, maybe like a Havertz, that player that's going to give Rodri the same amount of problems. He's now going, if he plays, he has to worry about Bruno Fernandes. He didn't have that headache at the weekend. Also, United have been much better on the counter-attack than Chelsea. That's fact. The other point is, where City got so much success at Stamford Bridge was the false nine, because we know there was no Jesus. Aguero still wasn't fit enough to start. So Sterling was up there, De Bruyne was up there, Foden floated about, and it gave the midfield and centre-half so many problems. But Chelsea only play one in there, really, in N'Golo Kante. I mean, Kovacic floats about, but it's N'Golo Kante that's a holding player. United have always got two, in general. It's probably going to be McTominay and Fred. Could be Pogba. But they've got two players in there to combat that movement. So it's a completely different conundrum for Man City. United's set up with the 4-2-3-1, if that's the way they play, I think there's a better chance of combating Man City if they play the way they did than that Chelsea set up at the weekend. Primarily because defensively they should be a bit more solid. But Bruno Fernandes is going to give Rodri so many more things to think about than anything Chelsea did at the weekend.
So what should I say? It should be a good game, should be an intriguing game, should be a cracker.
You can use any analysis you want.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Is it on our network?
It is a game indeed
that
is live on ESPN Plus tomorrow. What a match it should be. The Manchester Derby, United against City, 2:45.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What Andrew Mariner did with Sadio Mane tonight, I'm not sure if that's still okay, to be honest. So, like, the boy tried absolutely everything. Was a few great challenges Walker Bros, but there were a lot of situations which should have been free kicks as well. And then the last situation when he goes down, if you see that back in the box, he hits him in the end with his left foot, and that's another penalty. So we cannot change it. I heard now that Man United had more penalties in 2 years since Ole is there than I had in 5.5 years. I have no idea if it's my fault or I don't know how that can happen.
We took a look at the stats, and he is right. United have had 27 penalties under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer during that time period. Liverpool had 16. Still, Craig, it feels a weird thing to bring up.
Well, maybe they've had 27 just penalties. I mean, we'd have to look back over them. I'm sure there's some dubious ones in there as well, but I'm sure there are some for Liverpool. Look, for 2 years, this side has been unbelievable, exemplary, you know. Neck and neck with City, the year City won the league. They win the Champions League. Last year, untouchable, domestically, untouchable. Now, under pressure, if they don't win the league, we know what it's going to be. The broadcasters. The scheduling of the early morning kickoffs. I wanted 5 subs and I didn't get it. And now the officials are against them as well. I mean, it's pretty classless from a manager who has been class all the way, pretty much, up until now. The bottom line is, his front three, as Stevie and the rest of us pointed out, are not operating. He's got to deal with the injuries at the back. He has youngsters in the centre-half positions that he can choose to use them if he wants to bring them in. If they're not good enough in his eyes, that's his problem. He's been there long enough. Could have replaced them, could have brought better youngsters in. If they're given contracts, then they should be good enough to come in and do a job. So he's only got one place to look, Daniel. That's at himself this year. And not at the referees, and not at VAR, and not at the FA and the Premier League and the broadcasters. It's down to Liverpool. They're way off the pace from where they were in the last 2 years. We can get the facts out of the points of the last 2 years where Liverpool were at this stage of the season. Mm-hmm. That's also factual.
So is it pressure? Why is he coming out and saying these sort of things?
I don't think he thinks he's under that much pressure. I mean, if he loses the league this year, he's not going to lose his job. If he goes out the Champions League in the knockout stage first, he's not going to lose his job. So I don't really see it, apart from the fact he's annoyed that his team are a lot more frail than they were. They're losing goals, they're not scoring the same amount of goals, and there's a title challenge by, well, looking at that, probably 5 teams, give or take. If we rule Southampton and Everton out of the long run, and Chelsea potentially, there's 5 teams huffing and puffing. I don't know why he feels the need to do it when his team have been brilliant for 2 years, and all of a sudden he feels the need to moan and groan on a weekly basis.
Shaka, this is something you maybe expect to see on a Liverpool fan site or Liverpool TV, as Craig might bring up, but not from the manager. That just seemed a bit weird.
It does. And to that point, if this were a politician, we'd say he's speaking to his base. And then that's all Jurgen Klopp is doing now, kind of riling up Liverpool fans and not doing a very good job of presenting a lot of those facts. What you make of the penalty incidents aside, this season, Manchester United have had 6 penalties, scored 5. Liverpool have had 5. So if his contention is, in previous seasons, Liverpool should have had 10 more penalties, I'm not sure how that affects anything. And it's strange from a manager who has been there, seen it, and done it. He came under for some criticism about his lack of understanding around English football and the traditions around Christmas when he first arrived. But this now is totally separate. And I'm not sure how you go about explaining this. Listen, Liverpool are still defending English champions. They're going through a lean spell. All clubs have to deal with that at some point or another. And I think you take a leadership from your manager. And Jurgen Klopp, for all that he's done, for as highly as I think of him, this is the strangest reaction I've seen that I'm struggling to comprehend.
Do you agree, Frank?
I do agree. I'm really fond of Mr. Klopp as well. I don't understand what he's trying to do. He doesn't need to find any excuses. I mean, this season is a big mess. I don't know what it's going to mean to be a champion of the Premier League this season with all the things that we see and all the things we are going through. For the penalty excuses, you know, I played from 1996 to 2001 for Chelsea, and I kept on hearing that Manchester United had penalties more than anybody else. So it's a long story, but I don't think that Manchester United got all those trophies because of penalty more given to them than others. So don't go there. Don't go to try to find something special. You know, everybody is doing badly and suddenly doing great, and they'll go back to bad or average, and it's what it is this season. So Liverpool is struggling because of injuries, because of the pandemic, because, I don't know, the tiredness of some players, and just go there. Don't try to find something else with, as Craig say, broadcasters and our officials. It's how can I say that? It says that it's bad. It's not Mr. Klopp. Mr. Klopp is over that.
Yeah, he needs to rise above that. There was a graphic come on our screen when Shaka was talking that said Klopp avoids sanctions for Man United coming. How's he going to get sanctioned for that?
Well, I suppose the argument is that he's trying to influence officials.
Well, that's what I was going to get to. But you don't get sanctioned for saying, I think you're trying to influence officials here, so I'm going to sanction you. It just doesn't work.
Is that their sanctioning look?
Yeah. And, you know, clearly, look, that is, Frank's right. Years ago, he used to say, the Stretford Inn at Old Trafford, that's where you got all the penalties. That was pre-VAR.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I'm not saying VAR's right all the time, because we can debate certain decisions, but it's probably right more often than not, and it's probably cutting out a lot of those decisions that were clearly not penalties, probably, and were given at the time, and they couldn't be looked back at. But you're absolutely right. What he is trying to do here, which is not an offence, is he's trying to get in the heads of the officials. Right, and he feels the need, the way his team are playing, to do that. I think he feels that to get over the line this year, they're maybe needing a little bit of help.
Right.
And so he is trying to influence them, but not in a way where you could be up before the FA and say, oh, because...
Then, so is that not just clever, then? Is that not trying to give your team any sort of advantage you can?
But I really don't think... We need to get a Premier League referee. Where's Walton?
Walton won't pick up the phone, will he?
By the way, is Peter Walton on the missing list or something? I mean, I know they're in lockdown, but I've not seen him for like over a year. I personally don't think referees are swayed by that nonsense. I think they go into a game and they make big calls on what they see at the time.
Right.
And then that is taken to VAR most of the time and it's looked at again. So I don't really think you're going to influence it like maybe you would have done 20 years ago. Referees will read it, they will know about it, but I don't think it will influence a decision. In fact, it might even go the other way. Maybe they'll just look at things even more in minute detail than they would have done before. So it might have an adverse effect, who knows?
Well, that's it. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Extra time.
We can go home now.
Well, no, that's it for some of you.
Look at that.
There's Stevie and his twin. Beautiful. There's Don and his twin.
Yeah, he couldn't afford a full frame.
Be sure to check out Extra Time over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
What a match we've got for you tomorrow, live on ESPN2, AC Milan taking on Juventus. Coverage of that match starting at 2 p.m. Eastern as we welcome Gab Marcotti into the show. As we record this, the game is going ahead despite COVID fears amongst the Juventus squad, Gab. It has been a long time, haven't we? We've seen such a big game with so much on the line between such big sides.
Well, no question about it. I mean, as far as Milan are concerned, they've been top of the table since week one of the season. The last time that happened was 10 years ago. Wow. When Milan manager was a man named Max Allegri. Of course, would go on to win four titles at Juve. So, yeah, it's been a while here.
Overall, Gab, the big question was whether or not Zlatan would be available. It was confirmed that he won't, which isn't the devastating news that maybe it would have been 2 or 3 months ago.
No, that's a great point, Dan. So Zlatan has been out since November 22nd. Milan have continued to win without him. They do have a number of other unavailables in midfield, which I think in a game like this are probably just as important. No Ismael Benacer, and of course Sandro Tonali is suspended after getting sent off in the last game. It's looking like it's going to be Krunic and Kessie in the middle of the park, which leaves them probably a little bit short of cover and of quality on the pitch. The good news for them is Theo Hernandez is back. Over on the Juve side, we talked about this before, no Morata up front like at the weekend. So Paulo Dybala gets another shot. And of course, they're going to have an issue with fullbacks because both Cuadrado and Alexandro, both of them, testing positive for COVID. So they're unavailable as well.
You look ahead to this game, Craig, and on paper you look at it, well, Juve should win this considering the talent they have in their squad when you compare to this Milan side. But the youngsters have really come together. They've pulled together so far this campaign and they are defying the odds in what they're doing.
Things you never thought you'd be talking about was certainly over the last few years and the last couple of years was Milan being in this position.
Yep.
At this point of the season. But this, for whatever reason, and, you know, we're seeing it in the Premier League with teams up there. We see it in France with PSG lagging behind a little bit at the moment. It is throwing up some different conundrums. Obviously, Ibrahimovic, I think it's 10 games he's missed now or so, but it does take a little bit longer to heal the old muscles when you're 39. Kessie's been a big player for them. I like him in there. Leal and Rebic have sort of been in and out up front, still getting the goals. But Juventus are not, you know, it's a new era under Pirlo. And, you know, obviously they're chasing their tail big time for the first time in a lot of years. I mean, I'm not saying they've been behind, but they've not been behind this far and this far down the league for a long time. And so it really is, you have to say, it would be a must-win game for them if they want to push themselves back into that title race. Because it looks like it's only Inter at the moment who have got absolutely no European competition to worry about now that are going to be their biggest challengers. But if Juventus do get a win, that's going to start asking this Milan side over the next few weeks some more questions because then you've got to bounce back.
Let's pick up on that point, Gab. Is it fair to say this is a must-win game for Juventus?
I think it would have been a must-win game if they hadn't won the weekend before. I think they can get away with not picking up all 3 points here. But then the must-win game becomes, of course, that Napoli game, which they have to make up, where originally Napoli didn't show up again because of COVID restrictions, and they were initially awarded the 3 points, and it had those 3 points taken away. Let's not forget, they have that game in hand. I think that makes a pretty big difference in terms of the ground that they can make up. But certainly, I think it's a huge game. I think it's a defining game for Pirlo about both about the football he wants to play and about Juventus showing that they can get results against other big clubs. The issue this season has been very, very simply. In the 3 games that Cristiano Ronaldo hasn't played, they got just 3 points. And that hurts you. Cristiano Ronaldo is there, and I think it's going to be pretty critical that they find a way to get points. But I wouldn't go so far as to say, you know, this is it. This is their season right here.
Must not lose. So what do you call it? A must not lose.
A must not lose game.
Yeah, it was about
Ronaldo. But you know, Ronaldo at 36, we saw him get praise at the weekend, continuing to be, as Gab mentioned, the key part in this engine.
Yeah, and you know, for all the talent that we know this guy has, and you know, he's been doing it for 10, 12, 13 years, maybe more than that at the top level. One of the biggest talents is being able to evolve your game from the silky wide man with the step overs, which we still see now and again, to the up and down the flank, to the realising, and it takes a coach and teammates to help you with this as well, but to realising and being honest with yourself to say, I need to change the way I go into your game. I need to speak with the coaches. They need to try and help me out here because, you know, I can't do what I once did, but I can still play at the top level, and I can still get these big clubs over the line in these big events by my goals if I have the other structure and facets of the team around about me. And I think he's done that better than anybody, almost reinventing himself as an out-and-out striker now, because he can't do in other positions what he once did. And I think it's 14 goals in Serie A this season, so he's not, unless he gets injured, the goals are not drying up for him.
What's the big narrative from Milan's perspective going into this clash, Cam?
Well, I think the narrative bubbling in the background, and you'll be pleased to know I have a piece up on the website about this, is the fact that, you know, in an unusual situation, this is a team that's top of the league, and they have three really big players who all become free agents on June 30th. And in fact, even today, you know, could sign pre-contract agreements to move. And those three guys are Ibrahimovic, fine, you'll deal with that at the end of the season. But the other two are Çalhanoğlu, who's played really, really well for the last 9 or 10 months. He wants a big pay rise. He won't get a big pay rise. But I think they have a big call to make on him. And of course, the massive one is Gigi Donnarumma. Of course, 21 years old. He's already one of the top five highest paid goalkeepers in the world. His agent is Mino Raiola, which doesn't bode well if you're trying to negotiate with him. And that's a big one. And the fear is that they want to get this locked up so it doesn't destabilize their title run. He wants to stay. Equally, the other question is, you know, when you're already making as much money as he is at age 21, how do you then give him, get another big pay rise, which is no doubt what Raiola will be looking for.
Right, let's get some predictions then. Gab, what are you going for?
I'm going to go for the draw here. I see a draw with goals in it. I'm going to go 2-2. I think one of the big challenges for Juventus, and I was listening to what Craig said about Ronaldo, I completely agree. I think Ronaldo, with playing with Dybala, and it's a huge game for Dybala, he's kind of forced to change the way he plays because you don't have the threat behind because Dybala drops off. And I think a lot is going to depend on his performance on the night. It's going to take something special.
I'll go for the draw too.
Draw two?
Yeah. But high-scoring draw.
Just to promote it, yeah?
Yeah, I don't want to say 0-0.
Well, me and Craig will be back here at 2 o'clock on ESPN2 tomorrow. Big preview of that game. Meanwhile, leading up to that, of course, everybody else in action as well. It's a national holiday in Italy. It all starts early. Cagliari taking on Benevento, that game on ESPN+. And 8 games between that and our big game on ESPN2. It's Milan against Juventus. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Just the one game in La Liga on Wednesday to look ahead to, but it's a big one. Athletic Bilbao playing host to Barcelona, and all the talk going into this game is Ronald Koeman talking about the lack of strikers. This is what he had to say after the victory earlier in the week. It's a number 9 that we're missing in these games, but it doesn't mean anything in regards to Antoine Griezmann's substitution. We have a lot of games and we need all the players. We've said several times at the beginning of the season that we need someone at the top to have more competition and more goals, more effectiveness, but this depends on many things. Let's welcome in Ali Moreno. The reason that Griezmann is brought up, obviously he only played for 9 minutes in that victory. Ali, what frustrates me from this comment from Koeman is the fact that Barcelona is such a shambles at the moment. There's no guarantee that they have any money to bring anybody in. So how about do your job, coach the players that you have, and shut up?
Yes, all fair points, Dan. But how about the fact that you actually had a number nine in place when you came in? And then you decided to say, you know what, Luis Suarez, not good enough for me. You got to go and find yourself a team. You know what Luis Suarez is doing right now with Atletico Madrid? Even though he doesn't look like he's fully in shape, he doesn't look fully fit.
Top of the league,
he's coming back from injury and COVID. Yes, that is correct. He's leading the league in goal scorer alongside Iago Aspas and Gerard Moreno. He's got 9 goals. So do the quick math. It's just a little simple math. I'm not asking people to do open heart surgery over here. Quick math. All right. You know how many goals Griezmann, Dembele, Trincao, Braithwaite, you know how many goals they have together? That would be 7. Well, 7 is less than 9. So with 4 players, you have scored less goals than the guy that you said, no, you're not good enough for Barcelona anymore. I want you out. Go walk out the back door. You made this decision if you are Ronald Koeman. You came in and you said, no, that guy's not for me. And now you're asking for that guy? Now you're asking for a number 9? You had a number 9 in place, and you told him to go. And now you're asking and saying, you know what? Guess what, guys? We need goals. Okay, yeah. We all told you you needed goals. And you decided to go get rid of a player when you didn't have a plan in place. And that's the part that is most concerning. If you're going to tell a player of the magnitude of Luis Suarez and the history that he had, history of success that he had at Barcelona, you tell him, hey, go get. You're not welcome here anymore. We don't want you here anymore. You're going to go find yourself a team. That's because you have a plan in place. That's because there's somebody else in coming that is going to score those goals. Not because you're going to lean on Martin Braithwaite to be that guy, because he's never going to be that guy. He's never going to be that kind of player. And so therefore, it shows the lack of plan, inability to make a decision, and then when you go and make a decision, you make the incorrect one. And Luis Suarez is loving this right now at Atletico Madrid, where Barcelona are struggling to score goals.
Is it me and my sensitive ways, Ali, but if I was part of that Barcelona attacking force, and my coach is coming out publicly and saying, God, I need someone that isn't any of this lot, surely that affects you, doesn't it, mentally?
Of course it does. And so for players like Antoine Griezmann, who were valued at such a high amount of money and was a big money transfer, and all the expectations are on him to, at the very least, score a few goals. Perhaps not be the number 9, but score a few goals, and he's not doing that with any sort of consistency. Of course it's going to affect that player. And it is going to affect other players as well. And it's going to put a lot of pressure on those players too. So as Braithwaite goes out there and he's running around and he's busy and he's a physical presence and gives you some speed and tries to stretch back lines, he's kind of doing his job, but you're not leaning on him to be the goal scorer. That, again, was never going to be the case. So what is he supposed to say? Am I supposed to be Brazilian Ronaldo now? Is that what you're expecting of me? Is this the sort of player you're looking for? Because if indeed that's the case, I'm the wrong guy for that. And I just don't think that you achieve anything by coming out in public and saying, we need a number 9. Yeah, you did. But you had one and you got rid of him.
So, attackers very much the talk of the town in Catalonia. Meanwhile, in Madrid, it's at the back. In particular, centre-back, regarding their captain, Sergio Ramos, wants a new contract. Not happy, though, with what he's been offered. We've kind of gone through all this before. And coupled with that is the interesting news. Jan Arge Fjortov tweeting yesterday that it's almost pretty much a done deal, if they can get the numbers right, David Alaba going to Madrid. Let's keep this simple, Ali. If you had to choose one or the other, who are you choosing?
Sergio Ramos.
Right.
And I don't make this decision lightly if I'm Real Madrid. I don't go and get rid of a club legend to bring in a player who's playing center back who's not a center back and has been playing out of position for a few years now. Now, as successful as he has been with Bayern Munich, I don't know that you actually get rid of a club legend and then bring in a player that is only going to give you a couple more years at a very high level. I just don't see that as good business for Real Madrid. It doesn't feel like good business financially, but also doesn't feel like good business in terms of the perception that you give as a club. Handling club legends is very, very difficult. Just ask Ronald Koeman and Luis Suarez. So just make sure that if you're Real Madrid and you're going to move away from Sergio Ramos, that the plan going forward is solid. is absolutely, completely, 100% solid, and you have a star coming into that position. So that then you can alleviate some of the pressure and some of the pushback that you're going to get from fans and from people that have seen Sergio Ramos being so successful with this club.
But Sergio Ramos is going to have to go. He's going to have to retire at some stage. He's 34 now, Ali. You've got Alaba that's 28. If it's not Alaba, it's going to be someone else. And when you look at his CV and look where he's coming from, he ticks a lot of boxes.
He does, but while I can see that David Alaba could be an answer for an issue for Real Madrid, it won't be this issue. Yeah, they may need David Alaba. And yeah, maybe, you know what? Guess what? You're playing left back, where he has played in the past, and where you have an issue if you're Real Madrid. That's a problem position. And Ferland Mendy, maybe the answer long-term, we're yet to see enough consistency from him. But it's certainly not Marcelo. He's not going to be in that position anymore. Mm. And at times, David Alaba has asked to be in a more advanced position, to play more in the midfield. All those things don't tell me center back. And you don't only have a Sergio Ramos issue at center back. You also have to have a solution to if you don't get the best from Rafael Varane, which we haven't seen this year. And it's been going on for a while if you're Real Madrid and thinking, okay, is he going to get back to that level? Or is he in the slide down, we're not really going to be able to rekindle that sort of positive performances that we have seen from Varane in the past? You assume that he's going to get back to being the dominant center back he's been in the past, but he hasn't been. And so you don't make a decision just on Sergio Ramos. You make a decision on both Sergio Ramos and Rafael Varane.
Ali Moreno, thank you very much. Just a reminder, plenty of content over on our YouTube channel. Go over there, ESPN FC. Be sure to subscribe.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Just a reminder, Copa del Rey action continues this year on ESPN+. Plus. A full program for you. Atleti taking on Cornelia stands out on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, you've got the likes of Yeclano Deportivo against Valencia. All these games available on ESPN+. Plus. Meanwhile, the least surprising announcement, surely, of the year so far. Greg Vanney is to be the new head coach of LA Galaxy. This, of course, after stepping down from the role at Toronto. Certainly, when you take a look at his CV, very impressive indeed. What stands out there, and the reason why we put it in, Chivas USA assistant coach. Ali, was he the assistant coach when you were one of the stars at Chivas USA?
That is correct.
Wow.
We went through that together. Challenging times for everybody.
As I mentioned, this was inevitable, wasn't it? Once he stepped down, you thought, well, he's going to be moving on to something else. Something else is definitely going to happen, and it's LA Galaxy.
You knew that Greg Vanney didn't just step down from TFC without knowing full well that he was going to land on his feet. And he knew full well that this opportunity with the LA Galaxy was going to be readily available. And he looks at a challenge at the LA Galaxy that was very similar to the challenge that he had when he first stepped in with Toronto FC. There's so many difficulties right now with the LA Galaxy. It's not just two or three pieces that he needs to change. It's a full club overhaul in terms of player personnel. You look at the current players available at the LA Galaxy, and you're not really all that excited. There isn't much to play with. There isn't much to really sort of wrap your arms around and say, yeah, you know what? A lot of building blocks here. Quite a foundation we have. None of that. Which then tells you that Greg Vanney, I assume, as part of him making this decision and going to LA, he's probably asked the LA Galaxy, hey, we're going to have to invest. We're going to put in some money. We're going to be smart with how we invest that money and see if we can get the few pieces that we need in order to make this team competitive once again and to put the LA Galaxy where they belong, at the top of MLS. Let's not forget that with all the success that he had at Toronto FC, that also coincided with the big investment of Toronto FC, of Jovinko, Altidor, Michael Bradley, and then the names that came after that. And you look at what he was able to do in terms of the supporting players around those big names, and that's where the magic of Greg Vanney really came to fruition. You really came to see a balanced team, but a balanced team that had superstars in them. You got to find that with the LA Galaxy. First, you got to find out what your core group is going to be. You got to find the supporting players, and then you got to go invest in the superstars. How they go about doing that is going to be tricky, but Greg Vanney is the man for the job, no doubt about that.
Ali Moreno, thank you very much. Just a reminder, the Bundesliga with us all season. Friday sees Borussia Mönchengladbach take on league leaders Bayern Munich. That game live on Plus at 2:30 Eastern. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. What a treat. Craig Burley back in the studio with us tomorrow.
Did you see what I brought?
What did you bring?
The flowers.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you very much, Craig.
Plastic.
Very generous. Be sure to join us tomorrow. Big show. Until then, goodbye. Welcome in to Extra. Oh, it's a low shot for us, Craig, coming up. Well, beautiful, you know, flowers to you.
Very inventive. I hope the questions are just as thoughtful.
Frank,
otherwise, I won't be doing extra time. I was thinking about this the other day. I thought, I'm going to stop doing extra time.
Why?
The questions lately have been absolute guff.
Well, it's not your choice as to whether or not you do it, is
it? It's a choice of
answering. It's part of your job, isn't it?
No.
Yes, it is.
Right, I tell you what.
Right.
If I don't answer any questions today, do you think I'll get in trouble?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Well, it's not part of my job then.
Well, but still,
part of my job is to do the show. This is just a little after.
No, this is still part. It's all incumbent, isn't it?
No, it's not.
It's all cumulative part of the show.
I'll go on a phone in.
It's late for Frank in France. He wants to go to bed. Doesn't need to hear you walking
on. Old people don't go to bed early.
Oh, pardon? Old people go to bed really early.
No, they go late.
No, they wake up early.
How come Steve?
Just one thing. When you reach me today, you know, to do the show just before we started, you say, good news, you know, Craig is in a good mood.
Yeah.
I'm always in a good mood.
Yeah, you're right.
When he's monosyllabic, that's when you know you're in trouble.
You know, I tell you how my day goes, Frank. Right? I'm always in a good mood, and then I switch on the monitors wherever I am, at home or here, and then I see who I'm working with, and that determines how my mood goes.
What do you mean you switch on the monitors? What does that mean?
My iPad at home, it's ESPN's iPad,
right,
that has been loaned to me.
Okay. And you describe that as a monitor?
As per the contract.
You describe that as a monitor?
It's a monitor. I look at it.
It's a screen. It's not a monitor.
And I've signed a contract to have that at home.
Oh, God, are you showing off that you've got an iPad in your contract?
None of you guys have had to sign the contract to have equipment at home. And I asked the question,
what is wrong
with
no one cares about any of this? Right, if Manchester City wins the two games in hand in accordance to Liverpool, they'll be 2 points ahead of Liverpool. Are Manchester City in pole position to win the title, Shaka?
Well, not pole position just yet.
You
still
have
to win those games. I'm going to say Manchester United are still in pole position.
Why?
This show's become a guessing game. When did Man United become a better side than Man City?
Well, that's what we're asking Shaka.
I didn't say they were in a better position. The question was pole position. And right now, United are joint top with Liverpool, same points, a game in hand. So that's pole position. I still don't think they're going to win the league, but that was the question.
Pole is spelled wrong, but we'll get over that.
Why don't we get... Where's
Frank?
Where's Don?
Shut up, Frank.
I think, again, you know, they have two games in hand, but they have to win those two games. But you know me, I think it's going to be a battle between Liverpool and Manchester City. So, therefore, I think Manchester City is not in the pole position, but it's one of the contenders for sure.
In your playing days, Craig, were you ever on a team that brought in many new faces in a short period of time, such as what Chelsea did this summer? If so, did it disrupt your team chemistry? What's happening at Chelsea when you were there, wasn't it? A lot of new faces coming in. Frank Leboeuf.
Yeah.
Zola.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was for the best at the time.
Yes.
LeBeuf, Di Matteo, Zola.
Yeah, did that affect the team chemistry? Did people like
Yali
resent all these foreigners Yali coming in?
No.
No?
No. Well, even if we did, they wouldn't have known because most of them couldn't speak a word of English.
Right, Frank's made up for that now.
I tell you what, though. No, actually, to that point, when I arrived at Celtic from Chelsea, there was a big turnover of players that summer. Tommy Burns had just left his... he'd been fired at the end of the previous season. Out the door went Paul McStay, who was a club captain for over a decade, injured, finished his career. Van Hooijdonk, Cadet and Di Canio all left
right.
to go to... The two of them went to England. Cadet went back to Portugal, I think. And so it was a big influx of players coming in, myself included. Then Matt Larson came in, Darren Jackson, myself, Jonathan Gould. There was a big list, Stephen Mahé from France. And then a couple of months into the season, because there was no transfer windows then, Paul Lambert came in from Dortmund and Matt Reaper came in September, the centre-half, the Danish centre-half from West Ham. So it was about eight or nine players come in, and to that point, we started the season very slowly. Lost the first two games, and it took a little bit of while to get going, but not as long as it's taken Chelsea.
And then what happened? Did you win the title by the end of it?
We won the title.
And then who was player of the year? By the football. How did Larsson not get player of the year over you?
How did Larsson not get player of the year? Oh, how did Larsson...
Quick Billy was better.
How did Larsson, Gascoigne...
That's it.
Brian Laudrup...
Oh, just all these players that you beat.
There used to be some really good players in Scotland. But my point is, there was a lot of players that got thrown in together and it was difficult. But we couldn't have got away with being still off the pace, whatever now, January.
Yeah.
Because it would have been done. Rangers would just have romped the title.
With Klopp's comments on penalties yesterday, it's clear Manchester United lives rent-free in his head, Shaka. Are there teams that lived in your head during your career?
Yeah, the ones he was playing for.
In my head. Nobody wants to live in that head, let me tell you. I don't know. I think... The toughest games I used to find were against Wimbledon for a number of reasons that we've spoken about on the show before, going on to South London, and then they were just, you just leave the field just battered and bruised. Never enjoyed those. Aside from that, you know, it is what it is, you know. I can't say anybody lived in my head, so to speak.
Frank, does Pochettino need to win the Champions League this season with PSG, or is it more important to get them playing with a swagger again?
Well, I guess the minimum we can ask him is to win the championship, the League One, and to see another type of willing to play together Paris Saint-Germain. But, you know, it reminds me a little bit of Roberto Di Matteo when he came out. I think it was after Avram Grant was sacked. And, you know, a guy, not maybe the a legend of Paris Saint-Germain, a legend of his former club, but maybe a good soldier and somebody who won for Roberto Di Matteo the Champions League after like 3-4 months. So it can happen to Pochettino because, of course, the talent is there, the qualities is of course there. No, I don't know for the chemistry and if it's going to work. It's possible, but I don't think he's going to be sacked if he doesn't win the Champions League. I think they will wait for the season after.
Yeah, I mean...
It's why they gave him a 1.5-year contract.
Within the questionnaire, the word need is the one that you could take out because you don't go in halfway through the season and then need to win the Champions League.
Right.
I mean, he needs to figure out how he's going to manage these big egos and fit them in properly. And get the defensive aspect of his game right. And then the following season, when they've had a bit of transfer activity, then the pressure goes on. This is a free hit for him. I mean, obviously, they're going to try and win Ligue 1. That's first and foremost.
Which
they should do. But the Champions League is pretty much a free hit because even if they get knocked out early in the knockout rounds, you'll just say, well, we need to make some changes here. So this is a free hit for him.
Shaka.
I'm talking too much.
Well, for questions. Someone who didn't want to answer any questions, you're answering all of them.
The questions have been half decent.
Oh, I see.
And I only switch off when they're guff.
Oh, lovely, good.
Which most days they are, as we said.
Shaka, don't laugh, don't encourage him.
See, he's not laughing, he's sighing.
Shaka's laugh sigh. Shouldn't the heat of underperforming signings be shared equally with the front office, Shaka?
back and player recruitment. I can't imagine Zidane being blamed for Jovic the way that Lampard is being blamed for Werner or Havertz.
A totally different set of circumstances. Jovic was brought in as a young player with an eye for the future and understudy to Karim Benzema, whether he fitted in and contributed, you know, that would have been a bonus. But when you spend the kind of money that Frank Lampard did and on Havertz and Werner and put them on the kind of salary that they're on, of course there's a lot of pressure, and certainly a whole lot more pressure on Frank Lampard in that circumstance. I think I'm right in saying that Werner and Havertz are in the top three earners of the club, and if you're underperforming, then you have everybody in the dressing room kind of looking around, wondering about their own position. So it's totally different. Absolutely. Lampard and any misfiring signings need to accept the heat.
An Americanism, that, isn't it, front office?
Yes, and there's an Americanism.
So, you'll know this, but didn't Real Madrid win the league last year?
Yes, I hope for you, you know that as well.
Well, there's been so much going on.
Right.
So here's the difference. Whether he brought in any of the players, Lampard, or whether Zidane brought in any players, when you win the league like they did, nobody's too fussed about anybody who's come in who's sat on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Because you've won the league, so you were making the right decisions by benching them or bringing them on when you did. It's only when you're losing games and under pressure that people start looking at the signings, particularly the big money ones. So the two managers that have been referenced here have no real relevance to each other, because if Frank Lampard wins the league, which he's not going to do this year, but if he was to win the league at some point and he was to leave the big signings out, he could go to Abramovich and say, we didn't need them.
Right.
But at the moment, Abramovich is saying, what's happening with... And why are you laughing?
Because I got the final question. I don't think I want you anywhere near it. Shaka, do you think with the talent the US men's national team has at the moment, their players playing around Europe with big teams, they can be serious contenders for winning the World Cup in 2026?
I'd like Craig to answer this question, please. I'd like to nominate Craig Burley to answer this.
I'm going to... Well, you nominate me and then I'm going to nominate another three people.
Frank, what do you think?
Well, you know what? It's crazy for a country, even if soccer is not part of the big culture in the US. I think for a country with that amount of population that they have, they should be able, if they really take it seriously, to be contender for a World Cup every 4 years. It's like for Mexico as well. You know, when you have so many people, I think 30 million people play soccer in the US, where only 3 million people play soccer in France. So it should be possible to build something to make sure that every 4 years you're a contender. So if they take it seriously, if they really do academies like they should do it and prepare the youth like they should, yeah, in 2026, it's 5 years from now, it's possible.
Well,
you know where the World Cup is in 2026?
Yes, it's here in the US.
It is.
So the answer is the US have started to produce some really good young players, right? We know that.
Yes.
Right? But you've got to look around some of the big countries and see how many top quality players they've got. So they're not going to win the World Cup in 2026. They are going to qualify through this abysmal qualification called the Hex.
They're hosting 2026.
Yeah, but some people over here think it's a super difficult qualification. It's
right.
Not. But there will be some US analysts who'll say, well, why not? Rah, rah, rah. So it's good to have some really good
youngsters. What do they do?
Ah, we can win it, folks, and when we don't win it, you're all going to be upset because I told you we can win it. No, they're not listening.
Craig,
yes.
Craig, can I just say one thing?
Oh.
Remember in 2002, South Korea, I don't want to make mistakes here, South Korea prepared for a year the World Cup and finished third,
okay,
beating Italy, I think, in a quarterfinal. So, you know, why he shouldn't be possible.
Yeah, but that's kind of different, because USA did that in 94, Frank, but now they've got real players in Europe, the likes of Gio Reyna, Pulisic. They're not going to pull them for a year and put them all together in, like, boot camp so you can go and win the World Cup.
I will... I don't think I'm being controversial here. I say the US will not win the World Cup in 2026, but they might have a... They potentially could have a good competition, which might mean getting to, I don't know, a quarter-final or something, but yeah.
Well, so, great. Thank you. What a privilege it's been that you've answered questions today. We very much appreciate that. Thank you to Frank and Shaka.
Well, I had some decent questions.
Be sure to join us
filtered
tomorrow.
By our
massive, massive games tomorrow. Manchester United against Manchester City, plus AC Milan against Juventus. Lots for us to discuss.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.